Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another edition of Your Woke Bros. I am Michael, Jamal, Shabazz, Aziz, Mohammed, Sadiq, X, Brooks, Jamal. And of course, with me as ever, my comrade, my brother, my friend,
my paisan, my fratello, my fellow member of the ulama. What's up?
What's going on, Michael, man? It's good to be with you, man. I'm actually in the holiday spirit. Thanksgiving is one of the few holidays that actually, you know, moves me. I can't lie. When it comes to Christmas or the holidays or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, whatever we're calling it these days, I'm not going to lie. It seems ultra consumerist. It seems ultra just made up bullshit gimmick to separate us from our money. Easter. Easter's not even about Jesus anymore. It's about a bunny. Don't get me started on Valentine's Day. You know, 4th of July, like, Jesus Christ, really? You know, we got independence except for the black people who were still slaves. It's hard for me to get in the spirit of a lot of these holidays, but Thanksgiving, and even though, you know, the problematic history of Thanksgiving where the pilgrims are like, these Indians treated us so nice. And we decided to give them yellow fever, you know what I'm saying, and smallpox and shit. Like, even the problematic nature of the origin, like, the idea that all the families around America deciding to come together and, you know, just be, you know, no work, no school, no nothing. We just be together and be grateful for having each other and holding each other down. It's kind of beautiful. And I do want to say this, and I want to shout out Bomani Jones for this. There are a lot of people out there on this holiday that don't have a family to hang out with, don't have people to be around. These times aren't happy times for them because they're reminded of the shit that they don't have. I just want to keep those people in our thoughts, you know what I'm saying, and shout out to them anyway.
Yeah, most definitely. And I just want to say real quick, like, I have no problem, and I think, of course, everybody should be aware of and conscious of the actual history of Thanksgiving for sure. And at the same time, we should be trying to create more experiences like Thanksgiving in general in our culture. Yep. It's probably one of the only days of the year where especially people who are, you know, really abused financially, which is, you know, almost all Americans, get like actual time. And we should just honor that. And we can't always be out like on the stunt on that, you know, like acknowledge it, be real about the history. Yeah. Maybe at some point, you know, change the name, whatever. But the basic concept and the basic experience, we got to honor, we got to support and, you know, and embrace, I think. Also, of course, with us is obviously the evil genius Junior, the Puerto Rican Jade. Or
the Puerto Rican. That's a good one.
Or maybe Jade is the white
Rob. The white Lopez. Rob Lopez, baby.
Ooh, shit. So we're of course full squad, full team, and we've got some stories to run for you all. And by the way, happy Thanksgiving, everybody, because we know that you're probably ducking away from your family. Yep. It's the morning. Maybe you want to get out on the patio, take a hit of
Yeah, or you did the sneaky shit, and left Friday morning. You're driving back now. You in your car, riding out. You ain't even stay. You didn't do Black Friday with them. You were just like, look, I'm out. Friday morning, top of the morning.
That was great. Now you are accelerating as you listen to that Woke Bros theme coming on. We should get to some real quick plugs. As always, the Michael Brooks Show, patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube where you can get clips and full shows. And please go to the Bell House where you can buy tickets February 1st, first Michael Brooks live show. They're moving fast. And then, of course, subscribe to the bomb feed. This is the feed. This is on Black Opinions Matter. One of my goals in life was to be the only white member of a kind of WB type project. So
checklist.
Mission achieved. Back to back pod. Check out the Daily Ding. All of that. And anything else wise that we need to
listen. Listeners of this pod will appreciate this. I just got off of the mailbag, and on that very mailbag, the Podfather Jade Hoy announced the next Count the Dings live show, which will be in Boston. Actually, it's going to be in Cambridge, Mass. Cambridge, Mass.
I shouldn't do this, but I'm just going to say that basically, you guys should send me up there.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. I'll put that in the writer. Don't worry about
it. I think I gotta be in the.
We'll get you. We'll get you up there. We'll get you up there.
Live show, dude. I gotta be.
But we're. Oh my God. So you could do some Boston impressions. Oh my Lord.
I will put on a fucking Celtics hat, a Red Sox jersey. I will be the most obnoxious. I will grow out a red beard and I'll just be like, dude, like, why do black people not respect white effort in sports?
That's happening on March 2nd. It's at the Sloan Analytics Conference at MIT, although I don't know if they're holding it at MIT anymore. I think it's gotten a little bit too big for MIT. I'm not sure where they're holding it this year, but it's in and around the Sloan MIT Analytics Conference. That's happening March the 2nd at the Middle East in Cambridge, Mass. Not Boston exactly, but Cambridge. Pak the Khan, have a yad. Yes, thank you. Thank you. I just took a bow, ladies and gentlemen. So that's happening March 2nd. You can expect tickets to go on sale probably next week, man. If you guys are getting this on a Thanksgiving Thursday or Black Friday next week, early to mid next week, those things will be on sale. You want to get your hands on those, man, because these shows I don't want to be the person to brag, but these shows have not only been outstanding, but they've been selling out quick. So you want to get on this as soon as you can. Obviously, you know what type of movers and shakers are in and around the Sloan Analytics Conference every single year. We happen to have a lot of friends in and around the Sloan Analytics Conference every single year. So we're going to have a lot of special guests come through, you know, do a couple panels, of course.
Bold Needle's going to be there.
Of course. Elizabeth Warren might show up. You never even know, man. You never know who's going to show up to a back-to-back show.
You know, I love it. You're selling it so well. You didn't even hear my ridiculous ass backwards pick. Fucking Bo Deedle. All right, let's get to it. He's like that ridiculous, like, he's like the detective on Fox News. He's always just like, Obama divided the country.
Obama divided the country. That's hilarious. That's so funny.
Let's get to some stories. And first, we're going to break out. We're going to put on our sort of brand Maven hats. Of course, I'm the socialist with the good sneaker wear and the suit, by the way. I don't know. Did you see me in the latest TMBS? I was in a full, beautiful suit, my friend. So very, very capital oriented right now.
Sorry, I was on mute. I did want to have a reaction to that. I was on mute about browsing through my phone. I have not seen it. Can you please text me a picture of that? I would greatly appreciate it. Because listen, man, I see them Patreons creeping up. I know those suits are tailored now, boy.
I'm just like, you know what's really disgusting is Amazon. I ordered my Mercedes to go to Seville Row. So here's what it is. Fast Company has a report on a store that's going to be opening up in Plano, Texas, which they are describing as the department store of the future. And I'm just going to quote real quick from this piece. Entrepreneur Matt Alexander does not believe in the retail apocalypse. And then I'm skipping ahead. Alexander has big plans to reimagine a department store with a new company called Neighborhood Goods. He's received $5.72 million in seed funding led by Forerunner Ventures, Kristen Green's fund that has invested in winners like Glossier, Away, Bonobos, Dollar Shave Club. And fascinatingly, Alexander's opening up his first 13,000 square foot store this past weekend in Plano, Texas. It's not exactly the place you'd imagine a hip retail experience unfolding. And it goes on to explain that the sort of the goal of the store is basically, and this is always a mix, I think, of kind of like bullshit and hype and kind of true, where instead of stores, you're going to have like different parts of the store, which will have unique tailored brand experiences. They're supposed to like take you inside their production process a little bit more. And then obviously all of the usual accoutrements that, you know, hipster type people kind of like generally. There's going to be a bar, there's a restaurant, there's going to be an open space for people to hang out. And I just think it's interesting both because I do think even as just the margins of capitalism get more and more shrunk, and there's honestly just like part of the reason we have to, in my opinion, move to a post-capitalist world is because there's still obviously there's unending human ingenuity and creativity, but there's just smaller and smaller marketplace. There's just no blue oceans. I mean, everything has happened, so we need to reimagine it. But I think that what's happening here is, even though I'm not excited about the market model, I'm excited about the idea that people still want to exist in physical space if they're enticed and intrigued enough.
Listen, my thing with all of this stuff, as much as I love buying toilet paper on Amazon.com, there is a visceral, like, just straight up reaction to walking into, say, Kith in New York City, right? Which is like, it's a sneaker store, it's a streetwear store, it's all it is. But they, you know, but they've tried to curate an experience. Okay, they have an ice cream bar, like they do exclusive drops, they do all of this shit. At the end of the day, when people show up to Kit, they feel like, you know what? I left my house to be here, but this was fun, right? Like this was cool. Yeah. Like this, even if I didn't buy something, guess what? When I buy something, I'm gonna wanna share that. I'm gonna wanna tell people my experience at the Kit store. I think, and again, like there's something about being around actual other human beings, right? Like, yes. Ordering toothpaste in my underwear is great. It's convenient. It's perfect. But at the same time, like leaving your house with your significant other, with your mom, with your little cousin or your niece or your nephew, and going to somewhere, a shared space of, you know, like-minded individuals, like that shit is still valuable, right? And if people put the right amount of thought and, like you said, ingenuity, creativity behind something, and I use Kith as an example. I'm sorry, I didn't even get to finish my thought, but like, I use Kith as an example because they opened up two New York stores. They opened up the LA store, and this is a New York-based brand, but it's basically like, yo, they curated an amazing in-store brick-and-mortar experience, and there's a demand for it. And it's not just, you know, motherfuckers who are willing to pay $350 for sneakers, because that's not all they have in there. They have all kinds of shit in there.
Right.
But it's an experience. It's an experience.
And I think for me, what's interesting to me is I think the other two things I just want to hit on with this is I think that if we go the right way, we're going to start leaving behind. Like there's going to be more companies that are worker owned as an example, but they're going to be dope.
Right.
Right. Like the thing, like, Madragon in Spain actually has a really successful economic region, which goes back to the 50s, is primarily worker owned. And people have this, you know, and of course, like they were hit less by austerity and recessions and employment is higher and poverty is lower and all these other important things. But it's also like, I think that the creativity that the brands people have, that the experienced design people have, that the people who are making the designs for the glasses, the sneakers, the you know, the home, the furniture, whatever it may be, that is the vitality, the creativity is all there, even if the business models aren't matching it, is what I'm trying to say. So what if the next step of the department store of the future is that maybe it's a collaboration in a kind of like empowered regional economic zone, or it's owned by workers? Because, you know, on the flip side, the other thing that I want to touch on with this is there's been some great reporting recently on how, like, of course, Amazon is a massive factor in our economy. I'd say actually overall a really dangerous one and a fucked up one. But it's, you know, it's huge. It has major implications for the environment.
And they're good at what they do.
Well, they're good at what they do, but fundamentally what they do is not compatible with, like, dealing with the climate.
Oh, hell no.
Labor, you know, and of course they're good at what they do, no doubt. I mean, they're geniuses at what they do. It just happens what they do isn't going to work. But we can get into that. But on the flip side, Amazon is not the reason why there's been this retail apocalypse. There's actually been, well,
no.
It's more private equity firms loading up businesses with debt and then cashing out and letting the workers have the bag. And I just want to recommend, we'll put in the notes, there's a piece that came out in 2017 called The Causes and Consequences of the Retail Apocalypse, Private Equity Firms Overburden Businesses with Debt, and Now Workers Are Paying the Price. Will Policymakers Do Anything About It in the New Republic? And I mean, that basically lays it out. Obviously, you get into more detail, but just this idea that like retail will go away inevitably, nothing will ever happen inevitably.
That's bullshit.
It's bullshit, and economics is always determined by policy. And the policy we've allowed is, you know, Amazon to do a lot of really bad and dangerous things and have too much monopoly power. But on the other hand, this
private equity
is retail formed by private equity, and that's a very specific decision. It's not because people are buying underwear on Amazon.
Yeah, and it's not because people don't want to get up and go out to stores and buy shit. It's bullshit. And I want to just a quick anecdote on that. The day that I decided that I actually really hated Bain is when I found out that they had bought up KB Toy Store. And they did what you said, loaded it up with debt, and then unloaded that shit. And we have no more KB Toys, because I just remember KB Toy Store being the cooler, more laid-back alternative to ultra-consumerism Toys R Us, right? Yeah, like, Toys R Us had all the commercials, Toys R Us had all the appeal. But KB had all the shit, but it was just more chill, and they had more toys in the fucking clearance rack. And it was just so much iller of an experience as a kid. And then I read Bain Capital was the death of KB Toy Store. Yep. And that's when I decided, fuck Cory Booker and fuck Mitt Romney.
That's right. Exactly. more toys in the fucking discount rack should be a slogan at some point.
They did, man. They always had a brolic ass clearance rack for the toys, man. It's crazy. I remember that as a kid.
Like, there, just Waz walking around being like, they got a brolic ass.
Hire me, people. Hire me. I'll come up with a slogan and they'll come.
Waz and I would actually be good pitchmen. I really do.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. You got the black. You got the white.
Yep.
You got the socialist. You got the semi-socialist.
You got the... like the same music. I mean, one of the lessons about being global is that Waz and I are basically the same person.
Exactly. That's the good thing about globalism, man. And we're all realizing this. You can go to Jamaica and meet 20,000 Michael Brookses. It's crazy.
Right. In motorbikes, driving the product down from the hills.
With a mesh. On which are actually called marinas, for those of you who don't know, but most people just say the mesh. Oh, by the way, I just got problematic with the excuse me tank top. I'm sorry, guys. Hey, cut that out in post, Rob.
In short, the federal government said this:
congratulations, you played yourself.
So y'all keep thinking this is a game, man. Giggling on the gram and telling on yourselves. And I want to know who the record label executive was that got into it at the Philippe Chow. People say it was Elliot Grange.
And who is he?
Elliot Grange is the son of Sir Lucian Grange, the highest executive at the Universal record label. Universal Music. Now, I done told y'all several times there was people behind the scenes financing all this behavior because it makes money on YouTube and Instagram. And your reckless behavior that gets you likes and hits on YouTube got you out here bugging for some money. And here we are. And so you thought you was going to get into it with the son of arguably the most powerful man in the music industry, and this thing was going to end up okay for you?
Congratulations, you played yourself.
Because that was what, just a few weeks ago? It seems like things started moving rather quickly since then.
What we got next, Mike? Rob is there. He's just laughing.
Got to Tekashi. I know you're a big fan.
No, I'm not a big fan. You asshole. No, I'm not a big fan of Tekashi, but you know, it's, I hate when this happens, by the way, Mike, right? When it comes to prosecutorial overreach, when it comes to like the very definition of trumped up charges.
Yeah.
Like I never liked Tekashi's music. I didn't like his approach to getting as much eyeballs on his music as possible. I didn't like any of that stuff. I didn't like the fact that he's a Mexican guy who says the N-word more than any black person I've ever known. Like, I didn't like it. Like all of the stuff surrounding Tekashi.
I did wonder that one time when I was listening.
A lot of people have been like, really, Tekashi? Like, really?
I've only listened to a couple of Tekashi tracks. Like, I know enough to know who he is and what he's about. Sure. But like, that did cross my mind one time. I was like, does he have some black in him?
No, he doesn't. He's just a Mexican cat, which is fine. I love Mexican people, but like, come on.
No, bro. I meant regards like, to that word specifically. I was
like, even, come on, come on, come on. And whatever. I'm not even going to get into it. That's not the point of today's show. But no, what I'm saying is I hate when that happens. Like when something that I don't like at all butts heads with something that I hate very much. And that's the way the feds do law enforcement in a lot of cases, especially as it pertains to people in or around hip hop. Go see DJ Drama and what the RIAA tried to do with them over mixtapes. Go see Irv Gotti, what the feds tried. Irv Gotti actually went to trial and beat the fucking feds in court. Go see Bobby Shmurda, which again, knuckleheaded kid, whatever. I'm sure he was friends with and attached to a lot of people who've done a lot of crimes. But the way they structured that conspiracy case, racketeering, all this bullshit, all these mafia laws that they concocted to take down the actual mafia, right? Like people who were making in the like tens of millions of dollars off of illegal activities every year. And applied it to Bobby Shmurda and his mans from his block to lock these people up for 10, 12 years. You know, it's tough, man. It's tough. Like, this kid is getting railroaded. He is. As trash as his music is, as annoying as the shit that he's perpetuating, all of that stuff, he's getting railroaded. He was obviously affiliated with people who do have roots and elements of street activities to them. You know, that's a big part of the people who were quote unquote his muscle or protecting him. But the idea that this kid was involved with running an actual criminal enterprise, that you put 17 counts on this dude, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I basically don't, because we're basically the same person, I pretty much totally agree with you. And I just think what gets me even more, and you can go and look at the Shmurda charges. That's insane.
It's crazy, look at
FBI, NYPD surveillance of like the Wu-Tang Clan as if they were like associates of the Gambino crime family.
Yeah.
And, you know, and with really like, and it's not to say like, okay, whatever, like rappers might use security from different criminal organizations. But really, with the exception of like Death Row Records, which Doug Knight actually was a gangster, like that's just non-existent mostly. I mean, I guess there's a couple of other smaller cases.
Because it's important that you said that, because there are oftentimes where people who work in rap music specifically, because this doesn't come up in country, doesn't come up in EDM, doesn't come up in pop or whatever the other genres are, rap music specifically, because like you might have to go to Memphis, Tennessee to some club in one of the most crime-riddled areas in that state and get $5,000 to do a show. And you might have to pay some street cats to make sure that you're safe coming in and out. You just did business with some street elements. That does not make you a part of their organization.
And but that, also not only that, like to even like in a less reasonable direction, like frankly, Frank Sinatra was all over, yes, like his fans and his friends and his financial backing, I believe, were straight up mafia. And there might be that it, like I'm saying, like the most innocent is somebody that's security for you. But even if you're friends with scumbags and associate, yep, with bad, you know, people who do bad, mean shit, and you get a thrill off of that association.
Or, by the way, even do business where the guy's your manager.
Yes, but
he's negotiating deals for you.
And there's a lot of reason why you might want people like that to negotiate deals with you, by the way.
Oh, yes. Facts.
Particularly in a notoriously screw-over artist business. It does not mean that you're part of a criminal conspiracy. And then the other two things I just want to throw into the mix. One, I remember one of Bobby Shmurda's lawyers saying in a profile I read, and I do forget his name, and I couldn't find it before we started, but the quote was something to the effect of that people don't understand that police in a place like, where is he from? Brownsville? I forget where he's from. I think Brownsville. They operate.
Bobby's from Flatbush. He's from the 90s section, which is basically on the border of East New York, Brownsville, Flatbush.
Okay. All right. Perfect. So that general ballpark. So what this guy was saying is that in these neighborhoods, and again, like, this is a lawyer, right? And sure, he's making a case, but this is somebody who would know better than you, is my point, unless you've grown up in these neighborhoods. He's like, what people cannot understand as I talk about this case is the way the police treat these teenagers in a paramilitary fashion. And he wasn't saying like some of them might not do some shit or whatever,
sorry to interrupt, Mike. The guy's name is Alex Spiro. He's incredible. I actually got to talk to him back during the True days. My man Kevin Arnovitz is friends with him. He's a fucking NBA fanatic. So we were able to get him on the pod. I can try to do some back channeling. Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Arnovitz.
He was making that point.
Yep.
And you can elaborate on it. And the second thing I want to say too, I talked to another lawyer, a guy that I'm friendly with. He's a Ethiopian Jew patron of TMBS. So you know I like him. And what he said to me, and this takes it out of the realm of, you know, because even for as dangerous as the situation they're in, I mean, you know, Tekashi has lawyers, he has some resources, whatever. But this guy was saying, like, he's like, I'm talking to teenagers in schools, and I'm trying to explain to them that if they're watching like a Cardi B video or a Tekashi video, and they throw up a sign because it's part of a dance or some shit, or they saw it in an Instagram post, he's like, that can be used and might very well be used alone, yeah, to arrest you, to, yep, get you into legal trouble, to kick you out of school, to get you in the system, criminally speaking. And so to me, and what's funny is that most of mainstream culture goes, oh, well, that's why, you know, Tekashi shouldn't be throwing up gang signs. And you know what? Fair enough, whatever.
Sure.
A bigger point.
That's why Tekashi shouldn't be exercising his constitutional right of free speech.
Well, that's
why.
One, but number two, even to me, it's like police are literally monitoring children's fucking social media pages and building criminal cases on this type of thing. And by the way, with Tekashi, my read would be, and he might be a real asshole, and he might have done bad, whatever, but that's an exaggerated version of that same dynamic, because this is a made up narrative which got mashed with real life through his security. That's my read.
Listen, I just want to get, before we move on from this, I just want to talk about the idea, the concept, the entity that are the hip hop police. Like, I'm sure anybody who's listened to rap for any extended period of time has heard the term hip hop police. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy theory, some fairy tale of folklore. No, it's a fact. No, what I'm saying is that there is an actual unit within the NYPD dedicated to following rappers, watching what they do on social, figuring out what club, strip club, or a regular club they got booked at, stopping their vehicle in and out of the facility, literally trying to put cases on rappers, trying to put cases on young black men making money off of music. That's literally their job, dude. And this idea that Tekashi and his mans were fucking Al Capone and them fucking up society is fucking crazy. It's just, it's insanity, man. And quite frankly, it's racist. Like, that's the elephant in the room. It's racist as fuck, bro. And, you know, and it's something as simple as, like, let's just say, I remember there was a weekly hip-hop party, and I talked about this on Everything is Trash with my cousin, Nod. There was this weekly hip-hop party.
Stuff, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. You're going to love our next episode. It's taken us like 10 years to put it out, but everybody's going to be very happy about the next episode that we drop.
I get a first shout-out, I'm assuming.
Yes, probably. That one will make me happy about it. We talked about the Webster Hall party, the Call House party. Just Blaze basically put it together, whatever. It was this great party. Every week people coming out, whatever.
Right.
Some kids got into a fight at the train station a block or two away. They figured out that those kids was at the Webster Hall party. Party done. They literally closed the party because some kids who left the party got into a fight. Now, how many times at Izu, at motherfucking EDC, have motherfuckers actually died from drug usage? You know, like, you know how long it would take, how many fights it would take at an all-white party for them to decide that this party, this weekly all-white party, needed to be shut down? Like, it's just part of this systemic racism that happens. And, you know, it's, and unfortunately, people think New York City is this liberal bastion, the melting pot. It is oftentimes, but oftentimes it's just racist as fuck, reductive as fuck, you know? And the hip hop police is just a part of that, bro. Like, the once you pop in your rap and you have a sort of what we call a street edge to you, they're watching you. They're watching you, man. 100%. And they're trying to get you locked up. And if your associates do a crime, they're going to rope you in, whether you actually were a part of some conspiracy to kill or hurt or murder or whatever, or all the bullshit they put on people. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear what it is. And we don't, and again, it doesn't really matter what you think of these individual personalities. You have to look at the
Yeah. And you can say to yourself, like, oh, Tekashi, you know, he was doing the CB4 thing, which is like, honestly, like, that was a relevant movie in 1995 or whenever it came out. But, like, dude, it is so ridiculously relevant right now to the how conscious and cynical rap has become about how you can profiteer off of portraying gangsterism.
Right.
It's, oh, man. Anybody who hasn't seen that movie, just go watch it. Shouts to, Gusto, man.
That's a hilarious. That's a great movie. And also the that Sopranos episode with
my God.
Shooting the ass.
Oh my God.
All right. So, you know, like, I would say, like, for me, my just like the charges against Tekashi are bullshit.
Just read the charges. Read it.
And that unit needs to be abolished, period. All right. So we got some sound that I think you're going to play, Rob, of Donald Trump just being a fucking ass in California about these forest fires. But
there's been a lot of study going on over the last little while, and I will say I think you're going to have, hopefully this is going to be the last of these, because this was a really, really bad one. And I know Gavin's committed, we're all committed, I'm committed to make sure that we get all of this cleaned out and protected. We've got to take care of the floors, you know, the floors of the forests, very important. You look at other countries where they do it differently, and it's a whole different story. I was with the president of Finland, and he said, we have a much different, we're a forest nation. He called it a forest nation. And they spend a lot of time on raking and cleaning and doing things, and they don't have any problem. And when it is, it's a very small problem. So I know everybody's looking at that to that end, and it's going to work out. It's going to work out well.
I mean, before, I mean, you're an L.A. man now. Was out in L.A. with my, well, you guys are not in the same place, but my sister's out in L.A.
Yeah, she's on the east side. Is she in, like, Silver Lake or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you guys, I mean, are you all right? Like, what's going on?
I'm good. Like, honestly, you know, because the crazy thing is it's happening in Southern and Northern California. So it's happening over by the Bay, and it's happening all the way by us. A lot of people don't understand the vastness of California as a state. Like, the Bay Area and Los Angeles are further from each other than Boston and New York.
Right.
Right. Like, people don't understand, like, how far everything is.
The different
from
world.
Each other. Yeah, it's a different planet. Yeah. And so, you know, that it's happening up there and all the way down by us is just crazy. A lot of very well, and like, you know, these natural disasters, especially stuff that has to do with climate change. And I personally think the wildfires are direct, and I'm sure there's scientific evidence to back it up, is directly related to climate change. You know what I'm saying? The rate at which we're getting these fires and the intensity of them, you know, it's got to be related to the fact that the planet's getting hotter, especially up north, you know, where it actually rains a lot, where there is a lot of moisture. To have these crazy fires is, you know, it's wild. But down by us, we're good. It's fine, you know. They got their hold on the stuff that was happening in Malibu and all of those areas. Like, they've gotten it semi-contained, and things are gonna be fine. But yo, man, it's scary shit when you just realize that, like, a fire could start, and just the amount of brush and greenery that's in and around Southern California would, like, blow people's minds. Like, there's a lot of freaking nature, you know, because.
Yeah.
L.A. is not like New York, where, like, in Manhattan is, you know, probably like three trees or whatever. Like, everything is so spread out. You know, there just literally is a lot of nature. There's a lot of people in this area, but it's very spread out. And so
yeah,
people would
like
be shocked to know that.
Not like suburbs strung together. I mean,
right.
But on the other hand, you know, also you need to rake that shit up, which is what Donald Trump said.
Right.
Donald Trump went to California, and he was standing, and it was real funny because Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom were just sort of like, who is this fucking moron?
God. Yo, and it's like, yo, Mike, we've seen so many crazy things from this guy, but this shit was still surreal, bro. Still like, God damn,
what
you're
was
a fucking idiot.
Surreal. For the people that were with him, like, you know, Jerry Brown is a real, you know, experienced, shrewd veteran politician. He's seen a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
and
he ain't no spring chicken.
He's not a spring chicken. He's a man of the world. And he was standing there next to Donald Trump, like, fuck. Sweep up the floor, huh? And then what I loved was, I think Trump was like, that was happening in Finland. And then the prime minister of Finland, like, just had, you know, because I'm not as up on Trump shit as other people. Like, I get burned out with it. And I think sometimes people just need to chill. But I have to say, like, the headline, like, prime minister of Finland makes clear that he didn't say that they raked up the forest floor. It's just the good reminder that you got to be structural. It's bigger than Trump. But my God, our president is a fucking moron. And on top of that, I just wanted to say, he just tweeted out 21 minutes ago while we're recording this, brutal and extended cold blast could shatter all records. Whatever happened to global warming? ?
He's still going with global warming. Like, the fact that people are still going with global warming is fake. Like, I get it. It started with the Bush regime. That's when people stopped taking a serious. Like, people start, like, abroad, around the world, where they was like, okay. He still got Cheney, who's a sinister, evil dude, but, like, a serious dude. an intellectual dude, right? Like, okay. You guys did too much with Iraq. Like, U.S., you guys, we used to really look up to y'all. It's like finding out that your uncle's actually an alcoholic and a deadbeat, right? And then, you know, we did the Barry thing, and then it was like, oh, hell yeah, yo, yes, America, yeah, y'all fucking rebounded, yes, direction, y'all doing it, yeah, this is what we talking about, man, all right, cool, keep this energy, keep this going, this is what we wanted from y'all, and then we do W 2.0, man.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You know, the only thing that I want to say, though, to, like, unsettle people a little bit to me is it's like we get fixated on the amount of Americans that don't accept the science, and obviously Trump, you know, being insane about it doesn't help. But the real reason we don't do anything about this is because the fossil fuel industry still owns politics. And how many people and politicians actually accept the science but still – drill baby drill and, you know, throw public land to the private sector for exploitation. So to me, you know, it's like, it's a real big picture.
But Mike, honestly, dude,
capitalism. No, I'm not saying.
That's not what I mean. I think the problem with that theory, not even that theory, that read on things is places like Nebraska, where like when Keystone came through, and like literally everybody was just like, fuck this, right? But that's because everybody agreed what the truth was. You know,
Does everybody agree what the truth was? I think it's because like literally you're gonna put a pipeline through my yard.
But there you go. But there you go. Yeah, but that's true. The reason they
went ahead is because
politicians were bought and paid for too.
Absolutely. And that's
everybody agreed what the truth was.
But Justin Trudeau agrees with what the truth is, and he pushed harder for that deal than anybody. So it's like, we got to get to the actual root of the problem here. And it's not whether you think it's a problem or not. It's whose interests you're actually serving. Justin Trudeau has pushed for more tar sands deals as much as any of his predecessors. And he goes out and does little geeky, I'm worried about global warming, but he's not going to do shit about it because he's in the pocket of the oil industry. And that's the ultimate thing.
I think motherfuckers got to wake up.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not like a contradiction. I'm just saying, I think people get too comfortable calling out people for like being stupid when it's like,
we got to stay on everybody's asses. Yeah. You can't, come on. If you support Keystone, because like even Obama tried to, he wanted to.
Obama would have if there was not a mass.
He wanted to so badly. He so badly wanted to support
And Hillary, even more.
Come on. People were just like, yo, bro, this is ridiculous.
Bill McKibben, all props to him. Amazing movement building. That's the oil industry.
That takes a lot, bro.
Those things that we're not going to deal with it at all is all I'm saying. But, you know, that being said, Trump's a fucking idiot, and he probably wants to have sex with his daughter. So, you know, I could leave.
Well, that's as good a way as any to end the show, brother.
Well, let me just say, in conclusion, real quick though, what would be the Nation of Islam equivalent of that? Like we got like, that's the white news, sit down, white news. But what would be the equivalent of Nation of Islam? Like he would go to California and be like, see, people say that white people can be in charge of their forests. They clearly can't.
blaming the white man for everything that's wrong. Ooh, that would be crazy.
I expect Yacoubs to manage a forest. They can't even stop controlling themselves.
So they came from caves. They were grafted from pigs.
That's why they burned their habitat. They're savages.
Oh my lord.
All right.
Allahu Akbar.
All right, man. Thank you, brother. Right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to everybody, man. Of course, make sure you subscribe to Back to Back, motherfucking The Daily Ding. What's the Ken Fahey and Zach Harper? The Interceptable. Of course, make sure y'all become a Patreon to the Michael Brooks Show, man. Support Michael Brooks. He's one of the smartest, funniest, coolest, whitest motherfuckers out there. But yeah, man, I appreciate you guys, and I'm thankful for the whole TMBS Count the Dings community, man. You guys hold us down so ridiculously, it's not even funny. Rob Lopez, take this out, man. Later, y'all.